Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Small details or big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
So what drink are you making today?
I'm making a Bloody Mary because we went to Kenya for a month and on the plane I was like, oh, can I have a Bloody Mary? And it was so delicious that I had three. And I was like, Andy Oliver, Sheffy, oh, there she is.
Yes.
Always, what?
Always gets
too
what?
Fancy, and she would put like smoked garlic in it or something, and I don't want that. I just want a classic, clean.
Are you saying what
Bloody Mary?
I would never put anything in the
Bloody Mary. Oh yeah, you wouldn't even go near one. My mum hates tomatoes more than anything in the world. Our guests, Gok Wan and his wonderful, like, proper, deep friend, Alison, are coming round, and they said they'll have a little bit of alcohol, but they don't really want booze. I don't even see a Bloody Mary as an alcoholic drink. I know you can have Virgin Mary, we're not doing that. It's quite a substantial drink. And Mum's done a beautiful vegetarian menu, so I think it really works.
Can I say, are you not offering me an alternative?
I was going to say, Andy, are you having a drink today?
I don't know, I might do. If the drink maker would offer me an alternative, instead of saying, what are you going to do?
I don't have time for an alternative, I'm really...
You don't have an alternative for me?
No, but I can make you a tea.
Oh, thanks, babe. Yeah, I'll be having a vanilla rooibos tea.
There you go.
No, I feel like I should have a drink with Gok.
I want a drink with Gok.
Okay.
We have got the delightful and completely brilliant Gok Wan coming round today with his friend Alison, whose name is Fanny McPhee. And on her Instagram, she says, my name's Alison, but Fanny's funnier. So that's what she calls herself. And they are the dearest, 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 dearest of friends. Alison is really having a challenging moment in her life. She's got stage 4 cancer. So they're doing everything she wants to do before she passes on. So they're having a sort of amazing, joyful, sad, beautiful, extraordinary time. Gok is an incredible person. And I met Alison, well, actually, I met Alison about a year ago as well at an awards thing, which is when I met Gok. And she is also brilliant. And they just squeeze joy out of every second of life. And I just think they're incredible people to be around. I'm really happy that they're coming.
Well done, because you've got posh lath candles.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh,
there's no, that is so posh.
Babes.
You only light those when you have a poo.
Yeah.
You never, not a wee candle.
I light them all
it's
the
a
time.
Poo candle.
I light them all the time. That's how fancy I am.
It's true though, isn't it?
I like this with recording a podcast.
Yeah. You've got poo candles.
You've got candles.
This is my new thing that I do for myself is buy myself stupidly overpriced candles.
They are so expensive.
I never go out. So okay. All the money I used to spend on going out, I now spend on
I just think
one
you're
candle.
Pooing loads.
I well, this I think it's possibly that. So we've got a pumpkin and carrot terrine with a blood orange and a chili glaze. And then you've got a little pumpkin broth that's split with a bit of red chili oil.
Ooh,
and I
nice.
Made this up for you. Alison's vegetarian. I'm like, right, so we're going to do a vegetarian menu and I wanted to do something new. So this is Alison's carrot
so
and pumpkin terrine. And you've got pumpkin broth with little red chili oil. We've got garlic, Swiss chard. These are carrot and pumpkin pakoras with sour cream and
oh my God, amazing.
Chimichurri and pickled blood orange. Dash.
Thank you. And then you've got your
Virgin Bloody Mary, and then you've
got
your...
So I'm going to go straight into the
Bloody
Mary.
You're going to get straight... I'm going to
go straight
magic.
In. Cheers,
cheers,
everyone.
Cheers.
Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy 24. I mean, we're almost at the end of the first month.
It's a bit...
In a way, oh my God, that's delicious.
Oh, that's good.
That is good.
We're having Bloody Mary.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Is it good?
Makita, good.
Thank you.
Really good.
Is it a good one?
Spicy.
What makes a good Bloody Mary? Because to me, it's just hideousness.
So what makes a good one is it's got to have layers.
Yes.
It's got to have bite and spice.
Right.
You've got to be able to taste the celery, which you can do, because you put celery salt in, am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We made celery salt.
Oh, all right, posh. To go with the poo candle.
To go with the poo candle.
You're never going to lose that now, poo candle. And so I put a quarter shot of sherry in mine.
Oh, no. Oh, that would have been
a quarter shot sherry, because what it does, it just cuts through that acid of the tomato.
But it is delicious.
That's a good Bloody Mary.
Thank you, Gok.
And Gok, thank you so much for coming and bringing your true dear friend Alison
Gordon Parry, otherwise known as Fanny McPhee.
I was going to say could not find your surname anywhere. It's just Fanny McPhee on the internet.
I like to say Alison, but Fanny's funnier.
Well, it is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's always.
So our gorgeous Fanny, you're
take
welcome.
Take your broth and just pour it around.
Never had a guest serve us.
That's I know, and really? It's Gok, and you can't be bothered.
Literally, my
yes,
life.
Gok, you, as I am, are a child of hospitality.
Child of food.
Child of food.
A child of the food gods.
Child of the food
I
gods.
Am. And it never leaves you.
But I mean, my mum's probably been doing, I mean, always cooking, of course, and always cooking particularly beautifully. But I suppose being in hospitality for the past 15 years.
Yeah.
So I was already a grown up. But when you were a kid, your parents were running a Chinese restaurant.
Yeah. So my earliest memory is going to the Bamboo House, which was Dad's restaurant.
Is that what it was called?
Yeah. There was me and my brother both dressed in mini tuxedos. My brother's a year older than me. I've got that picture. I can give you that picture.
Oh, please give me that picture.
So there's a picture of us both in our tuxedos. And we'd go into the restaurant, and I was probably between the ages of 2 and 3. I mean, social services will have a word about this now. And we would go and we would perform in front of the customers. And
so we would dance
with the customers. Because back in those days, we're talking in the 70s.
Yeah.
Back in those days, restaurants were like clubs.
Yeah, of course.
And
yes.
So you would go there and you'd spend the whole night. Not like now. You go in there, you have a drink,
and you're then
off somewhere else. Well, you spent the whole night with the people that own the restaurant. So all of our customers became mum and dad's friends. And so they would move the tables back and they would create a dance floor in the middle of his Chinese restaurant, and we all get up and dance.
Actually,
and it was amazing.
That's
it was brilliant.
So wonderful.
Yeah. You charmed them.
Yeah, we charmed them. And so we became, from a very young age,
so
part
what
of
were
catering.
You dancing to?
It was everything from Johnny Mathis, Matt Monro, Buddy Holly.
We've had this
Elvis.
Conversation. See, yeah. So like the kind of weird, like Perry Como to like, you know, James Brown to like some, you know,
all,
something
all of them,
amazing.
All of them, yeah. And so we had all of that stuff. And so, yeah, so we were part of it. But we were all then, within moments, pushed into the kitchen or working front of house. And so we're always surrounded by food.
And people.
Yeah, and people. Yeah. And probably where I'm happiest is in a restaurant.
Yeah.
If
and
I'm
you
really
were always
going
to end up on some stage then.
Yeah, do you know what? Weirdly not, actually. I wanted to be an actor when I was younger, but prior to that, I wanted to be a farmer or an archaeologist. They were the two.
Farmer or an archaeologist, because they're the same.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't get that.
Exactly, great aspirations.
Farmer. Mucky boots, no.
Do you know what? I think probably from a young age, I just thought it was probably quite masculine.
Yes.
And it was kind of a bit grubby, and I was always really effeminate growing up.
It was a bit butch.
And so a bit butch.
Yeah,
and so, you know, you could be a fireman or you could be a farmer. Right. I think I'll be a farmer. Always wanted to be a farmer, and then an archaeologist, and then an actor. And so I think actually, but having said that, you know...
Can I ask, was archaeologist because of Indiana Jones?
No, archaeologist was because mum and dad bought a property and turned it into a restaurant, and we went in there. And of course, you know, it was back in the 80s and early 80s now. It, you know, the whole family became part of the production crew.
Yeah.
We were the labourers, and so we'd all get involved and stuff. And I remember ripping out fireplaces and finding all these Victorian tiles at this fireplace. And I loved the idea that I'd found something that belonged to somebody else that had all this history. And so then I've worked out that that was an archaeologist. I didn't even know what the name was.
And Alison, where did you find Gok? Because I read that it was only about...
Yeah, come on. Where did
I found under a stone. It was next to a marble.
Like
she
a
found
treasure.
Me in the Victorian fireplace in Leicester in 82.
No, because I read that it was like 15, 13 years ago that you met, so Gok would have already been quite a well-known person.
I think about 12 years ago, I was an advertising manager of a brand in Australia. And my boss hired him, and then I had to get to know everything about him. I already knew who he was and seen the shows and everything, but watched all the documentaries, read all the books, watched everything. And then we met. And literally, eyes locked across the room, he said something very rude to me in front of all the most senior people within the business.
Of course.
And I just knew instantly. That
You're
was
like,
it.
I love him.
Yeah.
Well, what did he say? What did he say?
You can't say.
Was it really bad?
It's our secret, Alison.
Was it really
you can't
embarrass?
Say, probably. I mean, I've
You don't
I've got,
even know. You can't remember.
I've just got this awful thing. Whenever I'm in a corporate environment, I become the most uncorporate person.
Yes.
And I can't help myself. Yeah. So I just have to go, tits! Yeah, yeah. Shit! Or do anything, you know, just because it's so
right.
corporate.
Because it's like we're in a
really
meeting.
Really nervous.
Right.
Am I allowed to tell?
No, you're not allowed to tell.
Oh, please!
No!
Oh,
no, maybe at the end of this.
Okay, right, tell us okay.
Maybe
some,
at the end.
We'll give him have two more bloody memories.
Yeah, yeah.
But this yeah. but then what happened was so we were working on this job. I was based in the UK. Alison was in Australia, so it was an Australian brand. And I'd had to fly over and basically style all the clothes, all the homeware, kind of work with the buying team, and then we'd shoot all the adverts. And our first advert when we first met, so we didn't know each other at all. We were in this huge studio in Sydney. There was a bed set up. We were gonna shoot this bed with all the bedding on. Got to lunchtime and I just said to Alison, right, let's get into the bed. We'd only just met. Let's just get into the bed. In the studio, everyone's kind of doing their own
thing. I mean,
you
gotta love that, right?
Just because it feels a bit, you know, because it felt like the right thing to do. Let's just get into the bed. So we got into the bed and I pulled out my phone, and music's really important to me. I didn't know anything about Alison. It turns out Alison used to be a singer and literally exactly the same taste in music, which is so rare to find in anyone. And we're talking about, you know, Sandra Cross, Lovers Rock, you know, all of the stuff that I'm really passionate about and I absolutely love. And we just started playing songs to each other in this bed. And at that point, we knew that it was a friendship, and we knew that it would be forever because we were joined by something which was so important. Yeah. And we'd lived such separate lives in other parts of the world.
Literally opposite
but music,
ends of the world.
Yeah, exactly. But music brought us together, and we still do now. Probably our greatest similarity is our taste in music.
Yeah.
And if there is a track that we're listening to or comes on the radio or whatever, and I like it and Alison doesn't, or the other way around, there is genuine disappointment.
Genuine,
a little bit like, well, I really like the vocal. Oh, I don't like it. Oh, what do you mean you don't like it? What do you mean? I like the vocal. What do you mean you don't like
the vocal? What's wrong with the vocal?
But it's like that now, yeah. isn't it? All these years yeah. later, so that's kind of how
we
met.
I mean,
one
of the first things that we talked about when I met you was music. Mm. Yeah. Music, it seems to be first and foremost in your consciousness all the time, really. Yeah. I mean, we literally started talking, we sat down at that awards
thing. Where did
you
guys meet?
Yeah. It was an awards show.
Where did you meet my friend, Gok?
Shut up. We were judges at an award show, a food awards show.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
And I was like, it's going to be really boring. And then it wasn't because you were there, and we had the most hilarious time. It was really, really
annoying
fun.
Everyone, all the bosses.
It was
music. It was all the, you know, and
we
that,
started
that
talking about Lovers
yeah.
Rock and growing yeah. up yeah. with this extraordinary, like a real breadth
Such.
Of musical.
But for me, when I was
Knowledge,
growing up, there was
suppose.
No pop music because I was working in the restaurant. And so I listened. The only music in my life growing up was the stuff that Dad would play in the restaurant, right. which was The Carpenters, Elaine Page, Matt Monro, all of these amazing artists.
Yeah.
But then I wasn't listening to kind of relevant music.
Did
it just
you watch
wasn't
Top of the Pops?
Kind of watched it, but didn't really get into it.
Mm.
But it wasn't until I was 15, I discovered house music and dance music that I then took that as my music. That was then my music.
Right.
I owned that. No one else owned it. It was all mine.
You kind of need that, don't you, in your life? Is that, you know, even if you've grown up with
passage.
Music in home,
yeah,
you need
to
be a thing
one.
That's yours.
Yes.
Yeah.
What was yours? Because I know for Makita it was really annoying because I used to introduce her to music and I was cool.
I was just wondering. because I was just wondering if you two send each other playlists because my mum had a mixtape.
It was called Punk Bitch.
Yeah, okay. And it was Nirvana and Red Hot Chili Peppers
and
Fugees.
It was a good playlist.
It was a bloody good playlist. And I heard that and I did think, oh, fuck, she's cool.
Shit. Is that awful to
it
think
was
that
annoying.
Mum's really cool?
It was annoying.
Is it annoying?
Yeah, it was annoying. Because then I got very into the thing that I say is mine, which is grunge. Not rock, grunge.
Yep.
Specifically.
Oh, yeah, like Silverchair. Do you know
Silverchair? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I love Silverchair.
I've only vaguely because she just used to play it incessantly. I can't remember the songs. I just remember
very
the name.
Very talented voice.
But so this thing that happened with us with like starting to cook with other people on screen and on, you know, doing podcasts and all of that stuff in lockdown happened for us. You
became a DJ. Yeah. But were you a DJ before
that?
Yeah,
I was, and no one knew. Many, many years ago, I have always had quite legendary parties in my house. Invite loads of friends over. And in fact, I bought my house that I'm in now for parties. It was intention was to have parties.
Well, you do
in
live
there.
In the middle of central London.
In central
maniac,
London, with a massive kitchen, with great cooking space, loads of surface space that you can put food out, which is really important, again, coming from the restaurant. Yeah. So it's never necessarily just about the cooking, it's about how do you get to the food, which is really important. Mm. And so I'd have in these parties, and we would sometimes have up to 60 people on a Sunday come over. And they'd all bring a dish, like a potluck party. Nice. I would put the music on. And then my friends would say to me, what's the point in you having this fucking party? Because all you've done is play music. You haven't spoken to anyone. All you've done is play music. Right. And in my head, it suddenly went, oh my God, you're right. What's going on here? And it's so odd because I guess I'd never ever imagined that I could work in the music industry. It was never part of my destiny. Yeah. Number one, I didn't feel cool enough. And number two, I didn't feel like I had the education behind me or even the passion maybe.
But also, did you ever feel like maybe you'd become so famous as Gok Wan that you had to stay in one lane?
Never. And I've always been really lucky is that my followers have allowed me to diversify, whether it's food or fashion or kind of social awareness stuff, documentary stuff or music. I've always been of the thinking, actually, if I'm passionate about it, that's all I need to put on screen.
I was going
to
say, I'm not sure it's that your followers allowed you to. It's that you show every side of yourself, and that's kind of...
But I think you still have to respect that without your followers, you can't do it. Without
an
audience...
No, of course not, but I think that the people that follow you, that people that love you... I've walked down the street with you, and people properly love you as well. I was like, oh, my God, I feel like a wallflower. Yeah. They're like, go.
Some people even cry.
I'm like, isn't it like hanging onto his arm and stuff? I'm like, my God, they really, really love you.
That's a lot.
But I think that they actually... That they want to see all the different sides of you. It's not that not. So. I think they're waiting to see what you'll do next.
Do you know what? I guess because I became a public figure much later on, I'd had a full-on fashion career. So I was 30 when I went onto TV. Because of that, I think that I went into being a known person with a certain amount of courage, maybe, or honesty, because I've been an adult and I'd had a great career and met loads of really interesting people. And so for me, being on screen, actually the narrative around that, so the fame and being known and social media and the interviews and stuff, that became really easy for me because I was just having a natural conversation about who I was. I'd grown up. I knew who I was. Yeah. I knew how I felt about my own politics and about this stuff and that stuff. And so I think that's allowed me to diversify because I've always said, if you don't like it, you don't have to like it.
Yeah.
But kind of, I'm into it.
This is
who I am. And so the music kind of did that. And so what's really interesting is that going back to you saying in lockdown is that I'd been DJing for many years before, but I'd kept it really quiet because unless you bought a ticket to a festival or a club, you wouldn't have known that I was a DJ. I didn't really put it on socials. Then it got to lockdown and I had the biggest meltdown. It was the most awful time for me.
Did you find lockdown really hard?
Like the hardest experience of my life.
Really?
Because I'm a people person.
Yeah.
I have to be around my friends. I have to be busy. DJing was a way of me connecting with the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it was never supposed to be a big deal. It was never supposed to, it was about me going, right, I'm going to get really pissed on my iPhone camera. I'm going to play out some old 90s vocal house. And if you want to tune in, you can.
Right.
And the first one was, a couple of hundred people. Then it was a couple of thousand. And then it was tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, until it became one of the largest live streams. And it was all by accident.
Wicked.
And by which time I bought all the kit.
Yeah, yeah.
Had it all there.
I am DJ.
I was then ordering vodka on Amazon because I was really embarrassed. I'm going to buy it. So it was being delivered. And I was just having this like kind of solo party in front of hundreds of thousands of people.
Who
and
loved it.
Yeah. Mm.
And when it started, it wasn't just the music. It was anecdotal. There were conversations. There was storytelling.
Talking to the strings of the camera.
There was conversation backwards and forwards. Mm. And people just felt so loved and looked after.
Connected.
But vice versa. It was really important. It was I get so many people now, like thousands of messages still weekly of people saying, thank you so much for the lockdown. You really saved us. I would have gone crazy. You know, all that kind of... But, in reply to that, it's like... that was about me as well. That wasn't a selfless act. That was, I really needed to do that. And it was so important. Yeah. And when we put on the big raves now, which we do at, you know, Coco and the Roundhouse and stuff.
I've seen.
When we do that, this room, you've got 3,000 people that have never met each other before. They didn't even know they liked dance music until lockdown, a lot of them, that they're in this space and all of, but they, but you have people coming on their own. We have people in their 70s and their 80s coming along, and it's the most joyful, accepting thing you've ever seen.
Yeah.
She's on stage! Okay.
No! Do you sing?
You have done.
I don't like it.
Is it what? Why?
I have terrible stage fright.
Oh, really?
So I don't enjoy it.
Tell the girls about your history with music. Because it's so gorgeous.
Talk to me about
her.
Because my mum was a singer for a long time. And it's really...
So I moved to London in about 1988, and I could sing, but I had never sung. And I got forced into singing at a club, cajoled into it by my flatmate. And it just all happened very quickly.
I don't know this story, by the way.
Within 6 months, I was signed. It just felt very foreign to me. I worked in advertising. I was behind the scenes, didn't like the light, none of that sort of stuff. It just was so overwhelming that I just couldn't get past it physically to do it. I was fine in a studio, but on stage, I hated it. Hated it.
Not a performing, but a singer, not necessarily a performer. Yeah. And I guess those are two different things, aren't they?
And so I would do sessions and, you know, sing for other people. And I loved house music. You know, I came to the UK right at the birth of Acid House. Right.
So we're talking Frankie Knuckles. We're talking all that Chicago house.
She's actually the only kind of house music I can deal with.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I can't get into like really deep, you know, you keep going to me, come out. I'm like, Gok, I'm not going out. It's like, you'll love it. I'm like, I will not love it. I'm going to be
awful. She's a dirty little raven.
Do you know what? I literally, one of these days, I'm going to get you in a neon bikini on a podium. You watch me.
On a podium.
Heads in the air.
Exactly.
Not with this knee. Not with that knee. I'll tell you that right now.
And so that's not something that got better, the stage fright.
It's funny, now that I'm older, it's just a completely different experience because your head is in a totally different space. Mm. And you understand that nervousness and fear, you can just use it as an energy on the stage.
I don't know. I'm going to argue with you now. Mm. Because I've always been, always, I see a different vision of you when you're around music. So having worked with you as a client and also being your friend, they're two very different roles. But seeing you on stage as a performer is also a very different thing. Mm. Now, not until you were diagnosed with cancer, I don't think you found your courage to say, fuck it, I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
And so actually, it doesn't really matter what people think when you are living with something which was life-threatening, but now is inevitable. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So when you've sang for me on stage when I've been DJing, you sing as you, purely you
on
stage.
The other stuff is gone. The other stuff has trailed into insignificance in some ways.
Because all that stuff is really just bollocks.
Fear is fear. Yeah. I used to throw up before I went on stage. I still went on though because I was determined.
Yeah, that's exactly what would happen with me.
For the first couple of years, I used to throw up and then go, oh, right,
okay,
ready.
Let's do this.
I just get on stage. Yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
So
So how has your life changed since you had your diagnosis?
Okay, so this is going to sound absolutely crazy. So I was diagnosed 6 years ago. Uh-huh. Very soon after I was diagnosed, I found out I was stage four. So I knew I was terminal.
So it happened
pretty much from the beginning. Mm. And I've had the best 6 years of my life.
Isn't that crazy?
Isn't that bonkers?
What's happened? What's made it that?
You become so connected to your life. You get rid of all the toxicity, the people, the thoughts about yourself, right. All of that.
It's that waste of time.
I mean, really, you just go, oh, there is no time for this. I've done things that I wouldn't have thought that I would have done. So I've been braver. I hate the word brave.
You have a fuck it list, right?
I don't have a fuck it list. I was thinking about it today and I thought, do you know what? When I'm thinking about what's the things that I want to do to fill these last days, it's not these big experiences. It's not that. Mm. It's sitting on the sofa with that idiot and doing ridiculous videos.
Not talking
videos.
About me now. Yeah. People on the podcast. She pointed to somebody else in the
somebody
room.
Somebody else pointed to someone in the background.
It's just, it's literally just being with the people that you love that make your heart sing and just doing whatever.
Yeah.
Like today when I went to buy the flowers, just walking down there, the sun was shining, got to pick out all the blooms, had a lovely conversation, and I just remember standing there thinking, oh, this is so nice. It's just that peacefulness.
Soaking up every tiny
everything.
Little bit of beauty.
It's being in those moments. Mm.
But you did drive.
You did drive
very
fast.
I know.
Yesterday.
But like I wouldn't.
Yeah, I'm
go,
just listening
oh.
to this going. It's not all daffodils
quite
and sunshine.
But I suppose it's a mixture of it all, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. I mean, of course, it's great to go in a race car, you know, 90 miles an hour around the track.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. That was awesome. That was awesome.
Did you get in the car, Gok?
I drove.
Oh,
you drove it.
Total petrol head. I love it. But it's so interesting, isn't it? Because we've been very public about Alison's cancer over my social media and also Alison's as well, because it's our relationship is on show and we don't want to hide anything. And I had no idea at all that I was going to be part of this journey.
Right.
And so it's Alison's diagnosis, it's Alison's cancer kind of thing. And I think that what's happened definitely over the last 12 months, how it's shifted again, because you are now getting to the final stages. Yeah. We can say that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So now, like literally months away.
Wow.
Yeah. So because we're there now, a fuck it list I don't think is really needed. It's more of an appreciation list. It's a gratitude list.
Yeah.
And that sounds so much like I need to get a yoga mat out and talk about Pilates. And it's not at all. But it is that little moment where you suddenly go, actually, that wealth or that job or that credit, it's no longer important.
It's no longer important.
It's that feeling.
Yeah.
It's that what you've got inside. It's that.
And
I
wonder,
what
would it be like if we lived our lives without
all
the impending
that.
Doom?
Yeah. Mm.
But lived like that. I mean, I don't know what that would be like.
Well, this is what people seem to be chasing all the time. Mm. And is that what it takes to know that you're going to die soon?
I wish it didn't.
Mm.
But I'm grateful that I got it. Mm. Because like I always say, I'd rather these 6 years that I've had than another 30 years of what I did have.
Right. Do you know, it's interesting, losing people when they're young. Like I lost my brother when he was 27, and after he died, there were so many people at his funeral, and he only lived 27 years, and in that 27 years, he packed so much joy, love. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's what you do when you're here.
But also there's
is
that
hugely important.
Yeah. There's that line in American Beauty I watched recently, and I thought it was quite interesting. At the end, he says, all I could feel was gratitude for every day of my totally ordinary little life.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's all.
What a great line.
Do you know what I mean? It's like everyone needs their lives to be all these things, but really it's just like, we've all just got these days.
I guess that's my point about the fuck it or bucket list.
Yeah.
Is it actually, all those things are wonderful. Yeah. Life mm-hmm. and all of its bits is just awesome. Mm. And it doesn't take a racing car, although that's lovely.
That was so much fun.
And you two, I mean, before you were going to, you went to Australia for Christmas, right? Is it sorry?
No,
New Zealand.
Australia, in September. Yeah, September.
Australia.
You went to Australia. And before you were going, I could feel your excitement. I feel like you're like each other's greatest love. There's a deep, deep connection between you
careful
two that is
now.
A really beautiful thing
careful,
to be
if
around.
If you overlove me, it gets right
oh,
on
my
tits.
Oh, do you get narky?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She overloves
me.
She loves mom, literally all the time. You know, I wake up, I want to have a cigarette and a cup of coffee, go for and she's ever hugged. And it's like,
what's this poo obsession?
We've both got a bit of a
poo obsession.
Yeah, I'm always what's talking about poo.
We can,
always.
Not that we compare, but we write, oh, that was a good one.
I think Alison is one of my greatest loves.
Yeah.
But I've always said that my greatest success has always been my friends.
Yeah.
Because my family's there anyway, and I'm very close to my family. It's very similar to this relationship here. But friends are so difficult to make. They're so difficult.
Proper friends.
And to keep and to understand, because we have so many different dynamics in our lives, don't we? We have relationships and work and lack of self-confidence at moments of our lives. And we have big, big, big things going on in our lives. And you cannot expect a group of people that are so completely different to you to just always get that.
Yeah.
And so,
but also you had such an awful time at school, didn't you? You
weren't dreadful.
Yeah,
dreadful.
Wasn't a time for you that was full of friends.
It's weird because I had a lot of friends, right. But I was so closeted in every part of the sense, you know, not just about sexuality, but about, you know, my confidence and all that stuff, and being very overweight and mixed race and lots of different things that I guess
I
kept
everyone.
Yeah, I read
a whole list. It was like tall, overweight, gay, mixed race. Yeah. Like, nice.
Yeah, I kept people away, and it wasn't until I really found who I was, which was much further on into my life, that I then allowed people in and trusted people, I guess. Mm. And so I think that, you know, I think Alison's one of the loves of my life. I've got so many of them, my friends. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just talking about partners as in lovers,
but loves
in our lives. Because they're so hard to find.
Yeah.
It's really, really difficult. And I make friends quite easily. I can sit there and talk to everyone.
Yes. Deep friendships like this don't, you know, they don't just, they're not, no. It's not like low-hanging fruit, is it? Do you know what I mean?
He cultivates it, though.
Yeah.
Like, he's not lazy with it.
No.
There isn't an expectation that it's just going to happen like that.
Yeah.
He works really hard at it.
Yeah.
He's there. He's really present. He knows what's going on in your life. He's checking in with you.
Yeah.
It's kind of a different level.
Well, I think it's why you're so good on telly. Because you know how to connect to people. You know how to see people and make them feel seen. And
yeah.
And I mean it.
Yes, exactly. I'm
lucky because I like people
as well.
Yes,
right.
Yeah.
I want to talk about telly, though, because obviously we all share that industry, the people around the table, me, mum and you. I love it to death, the television industry, but I find it also really hard and frustrating.
Right. Why is that?
Because I would love to be in a position where I can make anything I wanted to and not have to ask. Then that takes a lot of power.
I never wanted to be on television as a presenter. I wanted to be an actor when I was younger.
Yes.
And I realised very quickly, after I was diagnosed with my anorexia, which was in my early 20s after leaving drama school, and I suddenly realised then that I was I never should have been an actor. I was shit. But I was really bad at it, to the point where we'd be at drama school and I'd be surrounded by these very pretty. Everyone looked the same. Everyone looked like they were related. Then there was suddenly me, 6'1", 21 stone, bleach blonde hair, mixed race, fat and camp.
You went to Central School Speech and Drama, right?
And so I was like Hagrid walking into the dining room. That's what it looked like. This is no word of a lie.
No, but that also says a lot more about the state of Britain at that time and why every person in the drama school was white, affluent and blonde.
But I didn't know any of that stuff because I was so, you know, I'm from a council estate in Leicester. And I wanted to be an actor, and nothing else really mattered. You know, that was it. I didn't think about anything else. It was I want to do this.
I think that's beautiful that you have
absolutely.
That free,
I'm so naive.
Spirit. Yeah, I love that
courage of youth.
But yeah, exactly. But it wasn't until I then I got confused with being shit with how I looked. And so I thought to myself, if I looked like everybody else, then I was going to be really good. And I genuinely remember having this conversation going, oh my God.
I've got it.
Epiphany.
I just need to change the look
like everyone else and I'll be fine. And so then I lost all the weight dramatically. And then it formed into the eating disorder. And it wasn't until I walked away from that and I suddenly made sense then. It was like, you don't want to be an actor. You just want to play any other character that's not you.
Right.
So that's what it was. When it then jumping forward to television, hair and makeup and fashion and this wonderful world happened and meeting amazing people that I'm great friends with now and finding my confidence and whatever. And then television suddenly came up as an option and I had to fight it. Because it was so close to that world when it wasn't really that world at all.
And also a telly, you have to get as close to yourself as possible to be good.
I didn't know this.
Yeah.
Didn't know any of this stuff because I wasn't employed to be me. I wasn't a presenter where I had to show my personality. I wasn't also an actor where I could play a different character. I was employed as an expert. So I was a person that did my job on screen, which I've always have been. And I always say this now, don't I? I'm not a TV presenter.
Yeah, but you were not like a dreary, like you
the reason you were good at it, the reason I would never have watched any of those shows if you weren't on those shows, because I don't give a shit what someone wants to wear, frankly. Do you know what I mean?
Harsh but true.
And what you, I watched that and everybody else watched it because you were talking about it, because you were funny and you connected to the hearts
of
people.
I see, I'm gonna disagree now, Andy, but thank you for the compliment.
I'm gonna disagree.
I'm gonna have some more Bloody Mary.
Let him disagree.
I'm going to disagree. And I tell you why. It's because I've thought about this a lot, because post How to Look Good Naked, which was, it was a hit virtually overnight.
Was that 2004?
2006, God, the first episode went out. And it was a hit overnight. All of a sudden, everyone was talking about it. And people were really unsure. It was a half an hour show to begin with. Then all of a sudden, it went around the world. And it was in, I think, 138 countries, something like
wow,
that.
Really?
It was really successful. So then, a lot of people would say similar things to that, which is about, you know, it's your personality and you're funny and you're, you know, you're confident and you and I have quite a don't give a fuck sense of humour and, you know, personality. It's who I am. It really honestly wasn't about that. It was about the fact that I really care about people.
That's
and
what
so
I was
when someone
say.
Oh right.
You started disagreeing with me.
And for the podcast record, she's pointing at me now. And I have a slight fear of my life going off. There's going to be a batora in my face.
For the tribunal,
any minute.
Andy is now pointing at
me. She's waving a knife.
Hold on. So, kind of what you're saying, but genuinely, that program wasn't about my presenting ability or anything else, or even really about my personality, because it was because I desperately wanted to tell that person's story, and I really cared about it.
It was about your
and
ability
was,
to connect
yeah,
to them.
But I was also naive because I was taking somebody's self-confidence and their fear, and to me, by hook or by fucking crook, I'm going to help them. I'm going to do it. Didn't matter what it took, whether it was working really long hours in television or whether it was spending more money on the budget, we were going to help that person.
This is also when you were talking, Alison, about turning your fear into something else and kind of using it as fuel for almost like energy.
Yeah.
And I know Mum has done that with sort of the racial abuse that Mum went through as a kid and sort of turning that. Mum said something really interesting to me once about that. I said, it's just so painful to hear what you went through. And she said, yeah, but the thing is, it's become my superpower because of what I was put through.
Yeah.
I have unbelievable empathy for people and what they go through, which makes Mum good at her job. Yeah. And I think that's exactly the same.
Yeah.
And in fact, I get that from my parents because of my parents getting together in the 60s.
Yeah, how was that Chinese man? White woman in
just
Leicester.
Awful, just really? You know, estranged from their families. Mum spat out in the street, called names.
God.
You know, she got told once that me and my brother, a year between us, we had a double buggy, raised like twins, dressed the same, looked very different, but dressed the same. And my mum tells this story of somebody coming up and saying, "But they're not your children. They can't be your children because we are Asian or we look Asian or part Asian in the boogie and Mum is Caucasian." So I think because my mum and dad went through such adversity when they were growing up, they're really accepting.
Yeah.
And so they're accepting of everyone. They're really loving, aren't they? Really,
yeah,
they're full of love.
I mean, I've seen them on your Instagram.
They're incredible.
Your mum said you have videos of them like dancing
together.
So
they
gorgeous.
Brought a tear to my eye. They were dancing slow dance to each other. I just went, oh my God.
It's a love like you couldn't believe.
It's
when you see them together.
I turned 50 this year. My main goal now is just to have as much fun as possible and to really, really cherish all those big moments.
Yes.
I can't, I wouldn't have been able to say that when
you're talking about your eating disorder. I had an eating disorder. I was compulsive eater and then I became anorexic, you know, it's
the
same kind of journey with it,
exactly
really,
the
and then
same
managed
thing,
to get through it. And when I look back, I just think about, oh God, I was like tortured myself. Mm. You know, you're talking about all this stuff, Alison. It's like the shit
you put yourself through.
You put yourself through on a day to the rules that you have to adhere to. Oh my God, if I don't look like this, I don't do this, then life's not going to be worth living. And, you know, just absolute hell that you kind of put yourself through. How did you release those things and move forward? I mean, because for
I
had a lot of help.
Yeah, I don't think I have. I think it's always going to be a part of me.
Yeah.
You know, I always describe my anorexia as a parasite, which is that sometimes it's dormant.
Yeah.
But it never goes away, and sometimes it rears up again. And
well,
I think
it's
that,
addiction, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. And it's a disease, you know.
Yeah.
And people, we don't realise that. It's a disease. And it's so funny because, it, especially when I was diagnosed with it, you know, it was virtually unheard of that, you know, men boys.
Well, they certainly didn't talk about it.
Didn't talk about it. But of course it was there and it was happening and stuff. And as I've got older, I guess I've got the tools. And every day I think about my weight or food or something. Some days it lasts longer than a nanosecond.
Yeah.
But most days it's a nanosecond thought. Yes. And it will come up. And it's just one of those tools things. And I think because I guess I've made friends with it, and it's become part of my life, is that I won't let it control me. I now control it.
So it's in perspective.
Yeah. And it's only when things get really bad. And actually, the interesting thing is that I've just started running. I can't believe it's taken me that long to get this in.
I can't either, actually.
I bet he doesn't shut up about his running.
Does he wang on about it?
Got a feel he's so gone.
Oh, no, I saw you talking about it.
I'm a run wanker, everyone.
Absolutely.
All right, Alison. I'm here supporting you.
This is my joy.
How long are you running?
Okay, where are you running?
So, don't say, Andy, like I'm going to give you a boring answer. How long are you running? How long's it for?
It's like, we just have to do
it. Cut!
I'm going to redo it again.
Take two.
So, Gok, tell me about this new exercise regime.
You're worse than me. That's terrible.
I'll do it. Tell us about running. That sounds amazing.
Oh, it's really interesting, actually. So,
there you go. That's better. I'm curious.
Yeah. So the running. So I run 5K.
Nice.
4 or 5 times a week. The thing is,
early morning.
Really early, as early as I can go. And it's the best time to run for me. I've got all this pent-up ADHD energy when I'm asleep, and then it just comes out. So it's good. But then I'm fucking knackered. I need a nap. The hardest thing for me with the running is that I love it. I'm not a natural runner, so I'm not one of these people that goes, okay, I'm going to think about my life. It just doesn't happen. I'm like, get through this fucking run.
Tunes.
Concentrate, never. Can't listen to music. I have to listen to my breathing. I count my paces.
What?
I count my paces.
Does that make it harder?
Yeah. No, awful. It's dreadful. It's a horrible experience, but I love how I feel. So all those poor people that see me on South Bank going, go on, God, you've got this. I'm like, you, and I'm like trying to get through this run. I've got another kilometre to go. And it's so bad.
Why can't you listen to music? That's so
because
odd.
Because I have to focus so badly on not passing out. That is the honest truth. That is the honest truth, because I just feel like I'm going to pass out. I can't breathe. I smoke. I vape. Right. Yes. I drink. Yeah. I do all the stuff that I shouldn't do. Mm. And so
then I go running.
And I've turned a corner where I'm starting to enjoy it. I'm starting to enjoy talking about it. I feel really proud that I'm doing this and all this stuff. But it's the one thing, going back to the eating disorder, it's the one thing I've got to be really careful that doesn't trigger. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, because
and so
it
something
can become
that's so good, it becomes addictive for that. And so that's one area that I'm being really careful on at the moment, is I'm not trying. Like, I went for a run yesterday before I went to work. I could only get 3K in and I felt miserable because it was 3K. Not that it was 3K, but because it was only
5K.
3K.
Yes, exactly.
And so it's just one of those things. And so, like I'm saying, it's so and back to your original question, it's always there.
I'm doing couch to park bench.
I saw on your Instagram that you have started walking 7K a day.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
They're very slow walks.
No. Okay, you can back the fuck off now.
Because it didn't look slow. I saw you.
Your health
on
this trip, you've been here for 2 months now. You are a different... Alison arrived with a cane.
This is what I read,
And literally was so unstable on her feet. And we would go out. And so I walk a lot. I walk all day long. As soon as I've got a day off, and I've taken these 2 months off to spend it with Alison, so I've not worked very much at all, which is unheard of. So we've walked a lot. And I will walk everywhere. We don't drive anywhere. We don't get cabs. We walk everywhere.
How do you decide where you're going to go?
It's normally by food. It's normally about what we're going to eat, where we're going to go, where we're going to walk.
Curry puff?
Yeah, exactly. And so, but when you first arrived, we would go, literally take my dog out, Dolly out, do a small morning walk, and then you would have to go back and have a nap. Mm. You were exhausted. And now you're just fucking going for it. You're like a Trojan. And she's out there and she's walking. And it's amazing to watch.
Does it feel like vital, connected, life connected to you?
Yeah. It's kind of amazing because I can feel my cancer. I can feel it progressing and getting worse, and I'm getting side effects and pain and all of that sort of stuff happening. And I could just focus on that and think, oh, that's what my health is, right? And instead, the walking has kind of gone, well, yeah, that's going on and that's kind of to be expected. But look at this. Mm. Like, I feel strong. I used to do a lot of walking. I live by the beach in Australia.
Right.
So walk on the beach, you know, you do 5K on sand. For probably a year now, I've not been able to do the walking that I did.
Because you started feeling more ill.
Yeah. Mm. And I got neuropathy in my feet from chemo. So I was losing sensation and I couldn't balance properly anymore. So coming over and doing this, it's a bit of a revelation.
Yeah.
You think, God, look what your body can do.
Yeah, the body
can
really
deal with all this stuff.
And there's all these compartmentalizing, yeah. Like you can put
so
things
I
in
just was
places.
Like, okay, well, I know that that's going on here in my liver and whatever. Mm. But my legs and, you know, we're just out there and my hips are working.
But also as well, you coming off of chemo has been a huge change because you've always said to me, the cancer doesn't hurt me. I don't get pain from the cancer. Until now, recently, as it's got so bad. But up until now, for 6 years, you haven't really had pain from the cancer.
No, I've had no experience
but you've
the
had,
cancer.
But you've had pain from the treatment.
Yeah.
And so the treatment, which makes you lethargic and makes you sickly and gives you a bad tummy, you know, all of those other things. But actually, now that you've decided to stop having treatment... Yeah. And let nature take its course.
Yeah.
Now you've decided to do that. That now you're probably rediscovering your body, aren't you?
Yeah.
Because it's back to your body again. Yeah. It's not your body full of the chemicals.
And you're free from the effects of the treatment.
Yeah. Right. And the being tethered to your hospital and the scans and the, you know, because it's like a job.
Yeah.
I mean, I keep a medical diary.
Yeah.
You know, for all the appointments and everything else. And now I don't have to do that.
Is it good to have some autonomy back in your life and some control as well?
I actually do think that I've had a lot of autonomy with my treatment and with my doctors. Mm-hmm. I'm really big about self-advocating. You know, just follow them down a pathway of this drug, then that drug, and, you know, whatever.
Ask questions.
Yeah, ask questions. What's it going to do? What's the efficacy of it? How long will it last for? What's going to come after this one? If I do that one, can I do that treatment?
Right.
Is there the trial you want to put me on? Is it having any results?
Yeah.
But you've always been a naturally very inquisitive person. Yeah. You don't like not having the information, do you?
No, you'd the
like
information being, gives me control.
Absolutely, me too. Ask questions.
Yeah.
Have you read the Barbara Streisand autobiography?
No.
I probably shouldn't talk about this on every episode, but I have to talk to her about Alison.
I mean, you know, you know the running chat.
Yeah. This is
Barbara Streisand
running chat. She's written an autobiography, first time ever. It's a tome, Alison.
Yeah.
It's this big and it's called My Name is Barbara. So many things you brought up today, stage fright. Having this desire and need to ask questions always, to know as much as you can about everything. Curiosity, I think, changes a life and keeps us alive. I know it keeps me tinkering, curiosity, asking questions. And what you can do with Quincy Jones says, you know, if we're lucky, we get this many days. And it's really not that many to get to 50, to 60, to 70. Yeah. What do you do with those days? And it's just a book about what she did with those fucking days. And look what she did with them.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's what you're saying, Alison, as well. You're saying it's what you do with the days because nobody knows how many days
and
they've
got. No, they don't have to be big things and they're not, you know, they're big, they're small,
So funny because in the last couple of days, so Alison and I don't row. We've had one argument, right, in all these years? In the last few days, because Alison's been here for 2 months, I've taken 2 months off work pretty much, and we've had Christmas, and it is your last visit here, probably the last time I'm going to see you.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've had all these conversations, so I've been in this state of panic, like, fuck, what do we need? We need to do stuff. We need to be here. We need to be going here and doing whatever. And in my head, I was really eating away at me, thinking, unless we are filling 23 and a half hours of the day with activities
and
excitement
and experience.
And adrenaline and seeing stuff and whatever, is that I'm not giving Alison what
the Alison's correcting
here.
Of life.
Yeah. Correct. And it's so weird because I hadn't really discussed it with Alison. It's just in my head.
Yeah.
And I was getting frustrated because I was running out of things to do. We've done everything kind of thing.
Like,
and it's such a weird thing.
From watching this,
but
like,
this is
basically,
you've hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
And I spoke to Alison about this the other day, and Alison just said to me, and we've actually not had the post-mortem of this chat yet, so we're doing it now.
Yeah.
But you said that to me, and I thought about it, and you're absolutely fucking right, is that it is just us being on the sofa or, you know,
or
doing
we're
whatever
in a restaurant,
we're doing.
Or we're on a walk.
Yeah, or
on
a podcast.
Or we're driving
Andy
fast cars.
Or a podcast to Andy and Mikita's,
But do you see what I mean? It's so, because we don't have the handbook for this. So I guess you just have to try and make it up as you go along.
Yeah.
But isn't it? And then also, I've not spoken to you about this either. Years ago, I was having a really tough time with work and I was overworked and I was having everything thrown at me. I didn't want to say no to anything and I was burning. And I didn't know it was burnout. I never had burnout before, but I was burning. And now I know that. And I called my sister up, who is, you know, one of my greatest mentors. And she said to me, one day you're going to die. And I was like, thanks, Ormond. Thanks, sister. I'm literally my lowest ebb right now. And you're now telling me this. And she said, no, but it's true. One day you're going to die and hopefully it will be in a bed. Then you're going to be surrounded by things that really mean something to you. And so hopefully I'll be there. And, you know, hopefully mum and dad will be there and your friends will be there. But your bank balance won't be there. And that job won't be there. Because you're only going to have so much space around your bed. And that's the most important things. Do you see what I mean? We don't think about that stuff because it's always obituary stuff. It's up when it's too late.
Yeah.
And it's written down.
Yeah, like what will the Guardian say? Yeah. It's like, but who will be
there? It's so funny because I think about it all the time.
Right. And what is it like to think about that?
It's lovely. I have such a sense of peace.
Really?
Like, I know what my death is going to be like, and it's all planned, and I know what my funeral is.
I was
going to
say, have you planned everything out?
So, in Australia,
we
have voluntary assisted dying.
Are you going to do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I get complete control over that ending.
Wow.
And that just gives me such a sense of peace, because I'm actually not afraid of dying.
Yeah.
In a very kind of perverse way, I'm a little bit excited. Because what comes next? Yeah. It's the big adventure.
Who knows?
And I have this fascination with auroras. Mm. I love the Northern Lights and the Southern auroras. Mm. And I've been reading about this thing called the soul particle, which is where they believe us as a physical being when we die, our conscience is in our soul particle.
Mm-hmm.
And we are just, we are carbon. We have all come from dead stars. That's just a fact.
Yes.
And so when we die, when we become particles again, and our soul particle is out there, I just see myself in an aurora.
I didn't know that was called a thing because that's what I actually believe. No, that's
isn't that gorgeous?
Yeah. And I think that the people live in us in part in that way. That's how, that's just what I think about life and death. And you know, but I never knew it had a name. Like, I didn't know it was
actual, actual atmosphere.
Well, we've just become part of the universe again. We come from the universe, we go back to it.
To the universe.
And it is a form of reincarnation because as an atom, we become something else. And I just love that.
It's beautiful.
I mean, I'd love to see my grandparents and all my dogs, I
that
have to say.
That would be great.
But that's kind of my, that is my spirituality that I think about. And I'm just like.
You know who's going to be with you?
My son will be with me. I've got a 31-year-old son who is the most pragmatic, brutal, hard-nosed.
Yes.
Hi, Tash, when you're listening to this. Auntie Gok here.
Hi, Tash.
We love you.
Hi, Tash.
He's just, like, he's been my carer for the last 2 years.
Right.
We've had a very damaged relationship from when he was a child. And so we've been doing this journey of me understanding him, him understanding me.
Right.
And he is an astrophysicist, so that's what he's passionate about.
Wow.
So we talk about, in fact, this morning at 6 o'clock this morning, we're talking about the soul particle.
Right, but it's so interesting because he would be able to kind of have this conversation.
Well, he's kind of describing what they believe and how they believe it.
Right.
And,
and how the stars and the moon, Makita's obsessed with the moon, how the stars and the moon and the
Well, like he said to me, you realise, Mum, that we are, humans are made of carbon. And the only place that carbon has come from is dead stars. So billions of years ago, a star has died. And, you know, over the passage of time, we become...
I think the reason it is making me want to cry is because it's just, it reminds you that there is something that is forever.
Yeah.
And it's not actually this.
Yeah.
It's something else that's forever, said that which the universe is so bigger.
The universe is so magnificent and complex.
Yes.
He said, it isn't possible that when we die, it is the end of us.
Yes.
And I love that. And if just my consciousness is out there, that's awesome.
Wow. And I'm going to come back as a poo.
Okay, you bloody can.
Just so we all
know. You will.
And you will.
You started as a poo, you should continue.
Yeah. All right, Andy. Oh, nasty bitch. Nasty.
You only have a certain amount of days, and who knows how long any of us have. And I'm so happy that you spent one of those days with us.
We were really excited about this, genuinely.
We've been so excited. And when I realised it was you that was coming, because I said, it can't be Alison, she doesn't live here. She lives and then we looked at her and we went, oh, my God, there it is
Oh, no, she's here.
Oh, no, she's here.
Oh, no, more
she's
back.
A joy and a particular privilege to have you both with us, honestly.
And thank you.
Loved meeting you. And thank you for giving us some of your time that you've got together. Yeah. Thank you for sharing any of it with us.
It's been a nice break, Andy, honestly. It's been lovely. I've loved it.
Cut through, I get it.
It's been lovely.
To motherfucking life. And to Soul Particle.
And yes.
To the Soul Particle.
And yes. Soul Particle. Thank you so much.
You're beautiful.
I honestly didn't realise how even scared I am of talking about death. And to talk to someone who, it's so crazy, is facing death and knows when that will be.
Yep, she's decided. There's something powerful in that knowledge, isn't there,
yes.
In her? And
like I said, I'm perversely excited.
Because she's got it all planned out. She knows what she's going to do.
Well, also, I was thinking that one of the kind of craziest things that teaches us how ridiculous and magical and wonderful and awful life is death.
Yeah.
So to partake in it, kind of remind you of the magic of life.
To control your death and know when it's going to happen and decide.
But also just the act of dying reminds us, when she was saying we all become the universe, it's like it kind of is the most magical thing you can do is to kind of die and birth turn into something else.
Yes, if that's what you believe, who knows? I mean, that's the thing. It's a great unknown. Who knows? And when I didn't know it was called a thing, I didn't know this soul particle, because when I describe what I think happens after death, that's kind of how I always describe it. I feel like we go back to the stars and, you know, and then we become part of the people that we love. And that's how we remember the people that we love.
Come to our table and spend some of the time that she does have left on this earth with us, and to just be so open.
To choose to. And I know she'll fucking hate it if I say this, but it's a privilege to get someone to do that. She'll really hate that. And I'm really sorry for using that word. But it is that for Gok and Alison, time they have together is limited. They love each other so much. For them to choose to spend any of it at all with me and you at our table, I feel very grateful right now.
And actually sitting across from Gok, I realised I've known him for a really long time. You know, life does go quickly. And what do we do with the days? Gok One just made me... just made me laugh in a very deep, deep,
he's this funny
soulful
man.
Way. He's a funny dude.
He's a funny dude.
But he also, he gives so much. It's why he's so good on telly. He gives a lot of who he is to other people. Thank you, Gok and Alison.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.